And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. Our dramatic program today, Photographer in Buckskin, written by Mark Siegel, is the third in a series of 13 programs on American Jewish regional history, presented in observance of the 20th year of the Eternal Light program series.
Between the great oceans, the continent lies broad and beautiful. The rivers wind through the peaceful land, providing sustenance, and the mountains reach upward toward the absolute. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. To this land they came, the sons of many nations, seeking a sign of his presence and the brisk air of freedom. For 200 years, slowly, painfully, they pushed across the continent. And as they stood before the wonders of his hands, first on the stormy seacoast fringe, then in the plains and mountains, in a thousand places men sensed with awe the presence of their Maker. In the year 1854, high on a hill crest in Utah, a gaunt figure in tattered buckskin stood beneath the open sky, and seeing the tiny Mormon settlement nestled in the valley below, lifted his head like so many before him, and offered up a prayer of thanksgiving.
Blessed art thou, O Lord, who hast kept us in life and preserved us unto this day.
Yes, a prayer of thanksgiving. His name was Solomon Nunes Carvalho, son of a family of rabbis, teachers, and writers. And this is his story, an obscure but heroic chapter in the unfolding drama of America.
I left New York on September 5th, 1853. My purpose to join Colonel John Charles Fremont in his expedition through the western wilderness. I reached St. Louis a few days behind schedule and, though it was midnight, repaired immediately to the home of Colonel Fremont.
Ah, Mr. Cavallo, at last.
My respects, Colonel Fremont, and my apologies. Transportation is not exactly modern in these parts.
You'll revise your standards on that score in the next few months, Mr. Carvalho. But come in. We have been waiting up for you. Gentlemen, this is Mr. Solomon Carvalho, who is to be our official photographer. Mr. Carvalho, this is Mr. Eglofstein, our topographer.
How do you do, sir?
Hello.
And Mr. Fuller, our engineer.
I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, sir.
Hello.
Have you been in the plains country before, Mr. Carvalho?
No, Mr. Eglofstein. This is my first trip west.
Then I take it you have photographed the mountains of the east.
No, I've lived all my life in the cities.
Well, you won't find the wilderness much like New York or Philadelphia.
I don't expect to.
What Mr. Eglofstein is trying to say, Mr. Carvalho, is that you are free to withdraw from the expedition.
Withdraw? Why should I withdraw?
Well, I'll be frank with you. When you agreed to serve as photographer to the expedition, I too had some qualms.
As to my professional ability?
No, not at all. As to your ability to withstand the rigors of the journey.
Then why did you invite me to join you, Colonel?
Endurance is as much a matter of spirit as physique. And I felt you were a man of spirit.
And now?
Obviously, I was right. Let's consider the matter settled.
Good.
Between now and tomorrow, Carvalho, get some buckskin clothes and moccasins. Top hats and broadcloth coats are not the best apparel for the western wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
I traded my boots for moccasins and my broadcloth for buckskin. And the very next day, stood at the railing of the steamboat with Eglestein, watching as St. Louis and civilization receded.
Don't look back, Carvalho. Look forward. Oh,
I'm sorry, Eglestein. This is a new experience for me.
You were thinking of home?
For my wife and family. How did you know?
Oh, when I was younger, I did too. Always.
You've been into the wilderness before, haven't you?
3 times, with Colonel Fremont. But never into the Rockies and never in the winter.
You sound almost afraid.
Afraid? No, I'm not afraid.
What is it like, Eglestein? The country?
Beautiful, Carvalho. Wild, untamed.
Ah, good. It'll make wonderful photographs.
If the elements allow it.
There, you've said it again. Haven't you any confidence in the expedition?
Confidence is an important attribute, Carvalho. But there is another equally important in the wilderness.
For survival?
For survival and for peace of mind.
And what would it be, Eglestein?
Humility, my son. Humility.
We set up camp at Westport, where final preparations were to be made while we awaited Colonel Fremont. Our party consisted of 22 people. 2 were Mexican guides. 10 were Delaware Indians. Among them were Luchas, who undertook to train me in the ways of the plains.
Bongo ready.
What's ready, Waluchas?
Pungo ready. Heap good buffalo pungo.
Pungo? What's pungo?
Follow Waluchas. You see. There. This pungo. You learn ride pungo good.
Within the week, I learned to ride that buffalo pony. Under Oliver Fuller's direction, I tried to learn other things as well.
Hold it straight before you, Carvalho.
Like this?
No. At arm's length. Now try again. And fire 3 shots in succession. Carvalho, you have a wonderful eye.
Thank you.
For taking photographs. But you're no marksman. If you want my advice...
Yes?
Do your shooting with your camera, not your revolver.
We stayed in camp at Westport several weeks longer than we'd planned to. Colonel Fremont had taken ill in St. Louis. It was early November before he rejoined us, and there was little time to waste.
Mr. Fuller, is everything in readiness?
Yes, Colonel.
How many mules have you purchased?
50, sir.
Good stock, I hope.
Of the best.
They'd better be. The entire expedition depends on them.
I know it, sir.
Mr. Eglestein?
Yes, Colonel.
We have lost almost 2 months. Do you believe that we can cross the Rockies?
It will be difficult, Colonel.
I know it will be difficult, Eglestein. I'm asking if you think we can get across.
Yes, sir, I do. With one exception, we have all had experience in extreme hardship.
You refer to Mr. Carvalho.
Yes, sir.
Well, Carvalho, I give you your choice. We're going to send all our excess baggage back to Independence tomorrow. If you wish, you may accompany it.
I gave you my word, Colonel.
You don't seem to understand. This may be a question of your life.
I understand it very well, sir.
Think it over. Let me know in the morning. It's not so simple a decision to make.
That night I tossed and turned in my sleeping bag, and at dawn, still torn between thought of my family and the pledge I had given Colonel Fremont to accompany him, I was up. I saddled my buffalo pony and rode out from the camp a few miles to make my decision in solitude. Above me, the arched vault of heaven stretched to infinity. At my feet, the undulating grass, stretching as far as the eye could see, seemed to carry my thoughts upon its rolling surface, far, far into an impenetrable future. You cannot know what it is like to stand in a place seeing no human being, alone. Yet not alone, for all around me, in every tree and every flower, life, unceasing eternal life, was evident. I sat thus, perhaps for 15 minutes, my heart beating anxiously, yet with a strange serenity. And then, galloping toward me, I saw Eglestein, his wise old face turned to the luminous sky.
Yeah, I heard you leave. I thought you might want to talk to someone, perhaps to someone older.
You're very kind, Eglestein.
Friendships are made quickly beneath the open sky, Carvalho.
Yes, that's true. But why?
A sense of insignificance, perhaps.
Eglestein, I think I understand what you meant about humility.
Knew you would.
And it has helped me make up my mind.
You will return to independence?
No, I'll go forward with you. I'm confident that the Great Spirit, who shows himself in all this natural wonder, will also protect me in the trials ahead.
Carvalho, it's good to know you're staying with the party.
I'm happy in the decision, too, Colonel Fremont.
But all of this paraphernalia, do you really need it?
If I'm to make pictures, yes.
All of these books, are they necessary?
No, sir, not essential.
Then ship them back to Independence, the whole lot of them.
Yes, sir.
I'll get them together.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a minute, Carvalho. I mean what I say. Every additional pound is important.
I understood you, Colonel.
Evidently not entirely. What about the book you've just set aside?
This book, Colonel?
Yes?
This book is the Bible, Colonel Fremont. I do not think a Bible will impede us on our way. We started the long trek, the mule train stretching out before us toward the western horizon. From Westport to Smoky Hills. From Smoky Hills to Walnut Creek, up the Arkansas River across the Great Divide. Each day I made pictures, seeking to capture on the photographic plate some of the wonder and majesty of God's work. On, into the Huerfano Valley, through Sand Hill Pass, into the San Luis Valley, across the Rio Grande del Norte, into a country never before explored. Always, whatever the obstacles, I made pictures. In early December, we had our first snow. On the summits of the mountains, I stood waist-high in snow, photographing panoramas of the land. And in the valleys, we slogged along in the mud, down the side of one range, up the side of the next. But the day it happened, we were making our way up the muddy side of the mountain through a sheet of driving rain. At our left, solid granite. To the right, the dizzying canyon below, yawning, waiting. Suddenly, the lead mule took fright.
Lucius, watch that mule! Hold him! He's slipping! Eglestein, cut the traces! The lead mule is slipping into the canyon!
Carvalho, I congratulate you on your cool-headedness.
Thank you, Colonel.
But I cannot hide the seriousness of our situation from any of you.
We've recovered some of our provisions, Colonel.
Food for a few days, Fuller. That's really all that's left.
We'll find game, Colonel.
Game is scarce in these mountains, Eglestein, and you know it.
Our Indians are good hunters, sir.
Our ammunition is at the bottom of the canyon, Eglestein.
I have some ammunition, Colonel.
For a rifle?
No, sir, in my revolver.
Oh. A revolver isn't the best weapon for hunting,
Carvalho.
Well, gentlemen, we'd better face the facts. It's possible we will not get out of these mountains alive. Yet if we are to die...
Yes?
Let's die together, helping each other. Like men.
Eat it, Carvalho. It will give you strength.
I can't, Eglestein.
You must.
But...
Eat it. It is not the first time a man has had to eat his own horse to stay alive.
Lean on me, Fuller.
It's no
use, Carvalho. You can make it. You have to make it.
Not with this frozen foot, Carvalho. Please leave me. You lose the others. Fuller, get on my back.
I can lose the others, but I cannot lose myself.
For 5 weeks, we wandered in the snow-bound Rockies, slaughtering one pack animal after another and living on its flesh. When there were no more mules or horses, we dug for roots and pushed on westwards, always toward our only hope. Then, one morning, Wiluchus awakened Colonel Fremont with unusual haste.
What is it, Wiluchus? For the love of heaven, stop shaking me.
Indians.
Huh? What tribe?
Utes in war paint.
Utes? Where?
Standing in circle round camp.
How many?
As many as the fingers of 10 men.
But Luchas is a good guard.
Carvalho. Eglofstein.
Yes. What is it, Colonel?
Colonel.
Well, Luchas says we are surrounded by Utes. Perhaps 100 braves.
Utes. That is not good.
They come.
Yes. I see them, Wiluchus.
Everyone up. Let's stay together.
The Indians approached silently and stood in a group before us. The leader began making sign language to Wiluchus.
Yeah, look at them, Carvalho. The poor devils look as hungry as we do.
What is he saying to Wiluchus, Eglestein? He seems angry.
He's saying the white man does not belong in the mountains.
What will happen, Eglestein?
The worst, Carvalho, unless we can convince them we are powerful.
That we are powerful?
That it would be unwise for them to hurt us. Carvalho, where are you going?
Wiluchus, tell the chief we do not wish to hurt him or his people.
I have told chief.
Tell the chief we have great magic. Tell him to place his tomahawk in the snow at 100 paces, and I will show him.
Eglestein, what does Carvalho think he's doing?
I don't know, Colonel Fremont. Wait, he's taking his revolver from his holster.
Tell the chief I will make splinters in his tomahawk.
Chief say you have no bow and arrow, cannot break tomahawk.
Tell him I don't need a bow and arrow. Tell him when tomahawk breaks, there will be a sound as of thunder. Understand?
Yeah. Wiluchus understand. Wiluchus will tell chief.
Good.
And now, may the Lord be with me.
Carvalho, we've done it. They're going away.
When did you learn to shoot like that, Carvalho? Your hand was as steady as a hunter's.
It wasn't my hand that held the revolver, Eglestein. It was the hand of the one above. For almost 2 weeks more, we wandered. Oliver Fuller, our friend and comrade Fuller, went off into the snow rather than be a burden on the party. When it seemed that we could go no further, Colonel Fremont summoned me to the tiny fire we'd built to warm our numbed hands and feet.
Carvalho, I've about given up.
Colonel Fremont, I beg of you, do not say that.
I feel I can to you. Somehow you've proved stronger than any one of us. Carvalho, we have only one chance of getting out of these mountains, only one hope.
I'm ready for whatever you wish of me, Colonel.
By my reckoning, by what observations I've been able to make, and by Eglestein's best guess, we're only a few days from the Mormon settlement of Perowan.
Then let us push on.
No, we don't know in which direction. But from a suitable vantage point, perhaps we could see some trace of civilization.
A suitable vantage point? You mean that peak?
Yes, if we can make it to the top.
I'm ready to try it, Colonel.
I doubt we can make it, Carvalho. Not in our weakened condition.
It is better to try and to fail.
Perhaps.
No, Colonel, for certain. I've learned two lessons on this journey, Colonel. Eglestein taught them to me early. To be humble and to look forward, not back. Up, up, up. Through the glaring day and the black night, to our armpits in snow, scratching for the prickles of cactus leaves to support our failing strength. And finally, on the third day, Colonel Fremont and I reached the ice-capped summit of the great mountain and gazed into the distance.
Oh, no, Carvalho, no.
Before us lay not open country as we had hoped, as we had expected, but more snow-capped mountains stretching as far as our vision carried.
We're lost now, Carvalho. Totally and finally lost.
While we're alive, we're not lost.
In the face of this, how can you remain so confident, man? Look at the face of the earth before you. Do you believe we can survive in this?
It is the face of the earth that makes me know I will survive, Colonel.
I don't understand.
What is revealed in this grandeur? Is it not God's will? Are these mountains not God's creation?
I do not question that.
Then let us trust that he will deliver us.
I envy you your faith, Carvalho.
Do not envy it, Colonel Fremont. Share it.
It's not so easy.
There is a psalm that will help, Colonel, the 108th. Do you know it?
I think not.
They wandered in the wilderness in a solitary way. They found no city to dwell in. Then they cried unto the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them out of their distresses. And he led them forth by the right way that they might go to a city of habitation. Soon after our return to camp, digging weakly for food, I felt something beneath the snow.
Carvalho, what is it? What is it?
Eglestein, feel this. Feel it.
This rut?
Yes, Eglestein. But it's not just a rut. It's the rut of a wagon wheel. We have found a road back to life. Days later, we stood on the crest of a hill in Utah. This time in sunshine. Below, the smoke rose peacefully from the little settlement of Parowan. We bared our heads and offered up thanksgiving. Thanksgiving for deliverance and for the great good land. Colonel Fremont, whose ancestors had trod the soil of France. Eglestein, born and schooled in Germany. And I, the son of Spanish Jews, who fled to this new world in search of freedom and a new life. And knowing that we were saved, we three, saved also by the sacrifice of Fuller, an Englishman, and by the devotion of our Indian and Mexican guides, I offered up another prayer in my heart as well. Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Abram Kanuff, Professor of Clinical Pediatrics at the Downstate Medical School and President of the American Jewish Historical Society. Dr. Kanuff.
Adventurer, explorer, and scientist, Solomon Nunez Carvalho lived a life which is a dream in many a boyish afternoon, a dream to which Solomon added the role of artist, photographer, community leader, politician, and author of a bestseller. With it all, he was an observant Jew and even authored two volumes of biblical commentaries. Always restless, Carvalho left his mark in Charleston, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Salt Lake City, Los Angeles, New York, and the Caribbean islands. A student of Thomas Sully, he painted a number of excellent pictures, including a famous portrait of Abraham Lincoln. He was already a nationally known photographer when Fremont picked him. No mean distinction, for the latter was a popular American hero who personified the great American westward movement. As an inventor, he pioneered in the process for steam and hot water heating and developed into an astute, successful businessman to exploit these inventions. A pious Jew, Carvalho, in the midst of bitter Charleston dissension over the formation of the first Reformed congregation in America, wrote, "The only article of faith necessary for any believer is that of Torah min hashamayim, the personal revelation of Torah by God himself." Always a Jewish community leader, he helped in Los Angeles to organize California's first Jewish society, and in Baltimore was a founder of Beth Israel. In New York, he and his wife were active in the Hand in Hand congregation, now Temple Israel. His adventures as an explorer have already been dramatized in the script. As it turned out, Carvalho's diary was the only written record which remained of Fremont's last exploration. When Fremont ran for president, this diary formed the basis for a book which was supposed to be a routine affair, extolling the virtues of the candidate. Actually, it became a bestseller book of history and adventure. The American experience has given rise to all manner of men. Something in the American environment has made it possible for the Jews to participate joyously and completely in this diversification. In the free air of his country, Solomon Nunez Carvalho could be all American and all Jew.
Thank you, Dr. Knopf. Eternal Light drama today, Photographer in Buckskin, was written by Mark Siegel. Today's program was the third in a series of 13 programs on American Jewish regional history, marking the 20th year of the Eternal Light program series. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Clifford Carpenter in the title role with Norman Rose, Ian Martin, Leon Janney, Harry Belliver, and Larry Robinson. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light presents Isaac M. Wise, a drama by Morton Wishengrad. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking. Our program was directed by Kenneth McGregor. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication.